Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hola, ¿cómo estás? It's another day to change the world, and I'm so excited to get an opportunity to give you knowledge from one of the best thought leaders in the world. His name is John Dworkin. And today, we were talking about how to choose your big. You know, we bonded over the fact that we're both Brian Tracy fans, and John is a serial entrepreneur. And we dove into the elements of understanding when it's time to think big. Think big is his mantra. And he went into what exactly that means. And he also answers the question whether bigger is always better. We also talked about whether you can teach people to be an entrepreneur or is that innate. The number one thing that gets people and companies unstuck. How to reset or grow your company culture. Some of the qualities that make a CEO stand out. How to hire for the right people. And the lessons that he learned from trusting his gut for so long. I loved how John took his career into his own hands and basically created a career out of his name, out of his brand, out of his skill set. And so I hope that you all learn this and then you understand how you can tap into the power of you, use your difference to make a difference, if you will, and turn that into a movement and a business. Speaking of turning your movement into a business, I'd love you to check out Thought Leader Academy. The link will be in the show notes. It's a place where you can learn how to harness your skill set, turn that into paid opportunity, get the visibility that you want, and then grow in front of the audience that you seek. It's something that we've been putting together. The team here has been putting together for a while. We're pretty excited about creating that opportunity for you. We also would love for you to join the Facebook group. We love, meeting a lot of you podcasters and just interacting. And it's a place where people share ideas and communicate ways to collaborate and ways that they feel like they can change the world. I'll also put that in the show notes. However, let's hear John talk about how he uses his difference to make a difference.
In a world where very few people embrace their global identity and seek to understand their neighbors, cross-cultural expert Tayo Roxon is on a mission to bridge this divide. Each week, he'll open your mind with insights from some of the global minds in the world. Get ready, take some notes, and learn how to be the best you that you can be.
Welcome everybody to another episode of As Told by Nomads, and today's episode is with John Dworkin. We were just talking before the show got started, and this man does literally everything. I thought I've met people that did everything, but he's done everything. And so that makes me even more inspired. He is an executive advisor, business coach, and motivational speaker who's been called the business whisperer for his for his skill. Did I tell you I was corny? I'm very corny.
No, that's all right. It's all right. I can
for roll his with that. For his skilled and compassionate insights into what can keep a corporate culture thriving. At age 23, he created one of the first internet marketing companies in America, and then he went on to great success at several national commercial real estate firms. John has also built, trained, expanded, and restructured both sales teams and corporate structures. But after 20 years in the C-suite, he knew it was time to make a business out of being himself. He called that the John Dworkin experience. And that teaches the secrets, hard work, and discipline required to think big, very big. A prolific business blogger, John is the author of the Think Big Movement, a business fable about getting unstuck and transforming a business. A 15-year cancer survivor, he lives with his wife, has two children in Michigan, and he's active in community organizations. John has been included in the prestigious Crain's Detroit Business 40 Under 40 list and named the Alumnus of the Year by Eastern Michigan University, where he double majored in economics and journalism. And now he's going to double major in thinking big and thinking very big. Welcome to the show, John.
Thanks. Thanks, Tayo. You know, the very first rule of business I learned this a long time ago is never believe your own PR, ever. That's the number one rule. So, but I appreciate that intro, and I'm looking forward to being on your show. Thanks for having me.
The pleasure is mine. I mean, you're going to have to do a very good job of not believing this PR, because you've done a good job. And I just want you to give the audience an insight into who you are. I mean, you gave me that during the pre-show, but how did you get to where you got to?
You know, I'll go back a couple of years. I'm 45 years old, and I think one of the reasons is because I've always done, Tayo, exactly what I've wanted to do, and followed my dreams and my passions, and so that allowed me to grow in all the fields that I was in. But if I go back and you know, look, when I was 18 years old and I was about to start college, my dad gave me a set of tapes that's by Brian Tracy, and they were called The Psychology of Success. And he said, not that you won't learn a lot in college, but I think you'll learn more from people like this and tapes like these than you will college. And I became addicted. And from the moment I put Brian Tracy's Psychology of Success on my ears, I thought, this is exactly, it was like I was in complete alignment with what I ultimately wanted to do with my life. I wanted to ultimately grow businesses and teach people these principles and come up with my own and take a lot of their principles and make it my own and teach other people and help them be better, not only as individuals, but how they can run their businesses better, because I've always loved business. My dad was a businessman. My grandfather was a businessman. I have a family. I could go on and on about just business authorities and leaders in chosen fields. And that's kind of where it started. And so from that, I started an internet company out of college, and we can get into that, but that's just kind of the gist as far as, you know, what started it all.
Oh, that's amazing. And I love the fact that your dad gave you those Brian Tracy, books or audio tapes, because, Brian Tracy is a legend. I remember, and now I know
him,
I guess I didn't listen to him on tape, but because of YouTube and the internet, it's now connected that way. I've just gone back and listened to a lot of his stuff, and his time management speech was my favorite thing that I've heard from him. It was just, he broke it down in such a way. He's such a great communicator. So
he's the best. You know, time management, I learned a lot of time management from him. At the same time my dad gave me those tapes, he also enrolled me in a Franklin, which is now Franklin Covey, but at that point it was Franklin Planner, a time management weekend seminar. And I was like, Dad, I don't need it. He's like, I'm telling you, you learn how to master your time, you will master everything. So I did, and it was huge. And my time management skills are really solid because of the Franklin Planner and because of Brian Tracy. And so I spent a lot of time studying, you know, all of that.
And
even how I got into real estate. You talked about my real estate career for a quick second, but that was influenced by my grandfather. I would sit with him when I was 7 years old at his spec home in Milford, Michigan, and just would watch him negotiate deals and talk about real estate. And I thought, I want to get into real estate. And that's where my real estate passion came from.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. And so, yeah, in your bio, I talked a lot about the tremendous amount of success that you had. I mean, from internet companies to real estate firms, restructuring. And, you know, before I go into why you realized it was time to leave, what would you attribute all your success to? It wasn't just one industry. Yeah, I mean, it's insane what you've done. And you're only 40, is it 43? 45?
I'm 45.
Only 45 and you've done that? I mean, that's insane to me.
Well, I've definitely reinvented myself career-wise quite a bit. I started in the internet world, as we said earlier. After the internet world, I was in the real estate world for a while. And now I'm an executive advisor, business coach, and author, which I love. But, you know, how would I define success? I would define success as figuring out exactly what you want to do, creating a plan to do it, and going to do it, and staying focused on that, and be in alignment with what is in your soul and in your heart, And then everything else kind of happens in a little bit of an easier, everything kind of lays out in front of you a lot, much easier. Not that it's easy. Nothing's easy. I think everything is, you know, challenging and has its challenges and has its ups and downs and roller coasters. But in order to make it through all of those, if you're not, you need to do what you love. And some people will say, well, I can't do that because I can't afford to do what I love, or I can't afford. Well, you can't afford to maybe do it right now. But if you create and take the ideas, put it in writing and create something that is physical, that you actually are looking at every morning and every night, that you're spending 5 minutes minimum building and growing, then it will happen. But, you know, the when, you know, don't get lost, don't get paralyzed in doing nothing. Otherwise, your when never comes.
Absolutely. Wow. Thanks. Thanks for sharing that. So when did you then realize it was time to leave the corporate world and go into business for yourself?
So I started out of college in business for myself. And so that was incredible. And that was, you know, for about 4 or 5 years that I was working with my brother. He was my business partner. And we also had a buddy of ours that was our third business partner. And then after I was done with my internet company, I actually took a little bit of time off to just kind of clear my head. And then I got into real estate. And, you know, when I got into becoming a broker for real estate, it was never something that I thought, God, I'm going to be a broker for the rest of my life. I wanted to sell real estate. I wanted to sell investment real estate. And I just wanted to do it. And so I started doing it. And then after about 6 years, because I'm an entrepreneur by spirit, I just was getting restless. It was getting a little monotonous. I loved it. I loved the company I worked with. I loved the company that the people that I worked with. I was just getting restless. I had all these ideas in my head that I'd be mapping out in companies. And so then it got to the point where my company needed to promote somebody to take over the office because the person that was running it was getting promoted. And so they offered it to me, long story short, and I took it. I took the opportunity because I thought I was kind of restless and I needed something new. I needed a new challenge. And the challenge was unbelievable because I took over August 4th of 2008 and the market crashed in an intense way in September of 2008. And so what I learned through those first 2-3 years was something I could never read in a book, which I'm a huge reader and a constant learner. And it was something that I could never even, you can't learn in a seminar. I lived through the crash and then how we grew out of it. But after 6 years of that, I just again was getting restless, and I was running a top bottom line and top line, you know, office within my firm. I mean, I had to some what would think as an ideal job, but to me, I just had all these ideas and I had all of this creativity, and I just felt like I was getting stifled and that I had to be more corporate minded than I could creatively do things that I wanted to do. You know, so I would be home mapping out kind of business plans and books I wanted to write and courses I wanted to create. And I couldn't do it within the confines of corporate America, not to the extent that I wanted to. I mean, I wanted to be able to like come up with an idea and implement it the next day. And so I just felt like I was losing my creativity, and that's how I knew it was time to go. And so I left a very, what some would say was a very prestigious job, making a lot of money, and left to start my own company. But as I was about to leave and start my own company, I actually, for a year, went in-house to a company, and then I started my own company.
Wow. Wow. No, that's quite the story. And then now your mantra is think big, but do you think bigger is always better?
No, I think it's a personal mantra. You know, thinking big to me is about defining what your big is, reverse engineering that, and then doing the small things that need to get done every single day consistently that compound over time to get to your own personal big. So it's really another way of saying, what's your purpose? You know, and then so a question you could ask, or some people could ask, is, well, should your purpose be big? Well, yeah, it should be big. It should be big. Is because it's in alignment with your soul of who you are and what you want to do. So to me, I align it with that. You know, if you do, that's thinking big to me. And so it gets people's attention because it really means something different. And sometimes people don't know how to articulate it. But when I articulate it the way I just did to you, and I'll say it again, it's about choosing what your big is / what's your purpose. What do you want to do with your life? How big do you want to get? What do you want to do? How hungry are you? What are you going to do to make it happen? And what are the consequences to make it happen? And you know, what do you got to overcome to make certain happen, and how bad do you want it? And then you reverse engineer to the day and you figure out what you got to do every day consistently that compounds over time to get to your big. And that to me is the ultimate fulfillment.
Being in that state of constant learning. I've got it. Yeah.
Well, being in that state of constant learning and being in that state of consciousness where consciousness, you know, that you are, you know, you're working towards something that you defined, nobody else. And that's why I don't think I was in alignment with corporate America anymore, because I needed to be in alignment with exactly what I wanted to do. And, you know, maybe that's selfish, but I had such a burning desire to do what I'm doing now. I mean, if somebody goes to my website, they can see, you know, johndwoskin.com is, you know, you can see, you'll understand what I mean. I mean, I have, you know, blogs and podcasts and video tips and ebooks, and I mean, and not just, you know, one, I have almost 300 video tips and dozens and dozens of blogs and tons of episodes and three different podcasts. And I mean, it goes on and on, the amount of content that I have, and that's what's in my brain. And I have so much more content that is coming in 2018 and beyond. And that's what makes me feel fulfilled. And so I think the question that people need to ask themselves, and a buddy of mine called me when I was working at my firm, and he said, there's an Anthony Robbins quote I want you to listen, that I just heard, and I want to share it with you because I think it'll mean a lot to you. Success minus fulfillment equals failure. And even though I was successful, I wasn't fulfilled. And so to me, when did I know in another way is when I wasn't feeling fulfilled by what I did anymore, when I didn't feel like I was just, you know, at the core fulfilled. Anyway, I don't mean to talk too much, but that's kind
of... No, please continue. Yeah. I remember watching that episode. I believe it was part of Oprah Super Soul Sunday. I'm a huge Oprah. Oprah is, you know, you talk about Brian Tracy. For me, Oprah Winfrey and Nelson Mandela were my two sages growing up. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, you go ahead. No, please.
No, I mean, but you know, and that's what I'm reminded of as I'm listening to you, and it's really fascinating to see that you can reinvent yourself so much, because I think a lot of people, I always say there are two reasons why people don't believe they can change the world, and one is fixed mindsets, and two is limited worldviews. And in that,
absolutely,
in the fixed mindset area, a lot of people say, oh, I'm 45, I'm not going to be, what have I done? You know, I can't do anything. You've reinvented yourself from multiple times, you know, at the age of 23, and having you on, just hearing your definition of think big is so inspiring. And I guess, is that what led to the book, the Think Big Movement?
Well, I'll just quickly, I want to comment on something you said. Carol, I think her last name is Drack, I don't know, but she writes a book called Mindset, and it's a great book for some of your listeners that they may enjoy. And she talks about exactly what you just said. There's two mindsets, fixed or growth. And, you know, pick one and be happy with it. Or you know, if you want to grow, you got to have a growth mindset. But if you have a fixed mindset, you really can't grow. But I wanted to talk about Oprah for a second, because I, you know, Oprah to me is brilliant. She, you know, the interviews that she has and her insights and things of that nature. She had a show called Master's Class on for a long time on her channel.
Yeah.
And it was great. She doesn't have it anymore, but I was addicted to that show. And I used to, when I was running my real estate office, I had to give Monday morning meetings every Monday. And one thing I knew that the people in my office didn't watch that show, but I would watch it every Sunday and watch these phenomenal interviews and get such great insight that a lot of times I would base themes for my office around what those people were saying on Sundays and incorporate it, and then not always give attribution, but sometimes, and then I would kind of make it my own and then quote people, but nobody knew that I was taking it from master's class, from the master's class. So it was great. And, you know, she's both of, you know, Nelson and Oprah are phenomenal people.
No,
and
absolutely.
Changing the world. Yeah.
That's the whole thing. And that's,
yeah,
that, you know, when your publicist reached out to me and he told me about yourself, I was like, you know, I was reading halfway. I was like, yep, just, I want to talk to him. Want to talk to him more, because,
thanks,
you know,
Sam.
Oh, the pleasure is mine. And it's because of people like you that I, you know, I do the shows, because I want to show the world there are different mindsets you can have. This show is based on showing people how to connect effectively across cultures, also think and also make a difference. But the Think Big movement, obviously, I love the movement at the end. You just talked about what thinking big means to you. You really think that this can be a movement.
Well, to me, again, the movement is just an extension of my whole philosophy of just thinking big. And, you know, I have a new podcast coming out in January called Think. And it's called Think Business with John Dwoskin. Think big, think forward, think consciously. And because I really think it's important for people to stop and think. I don't think people think enough. And the movement in the name of my book, what it means is the movement in your mind. The movement is how can you shift perspective and see things from different angles and look in the mirror and have this movement in your mind that is going to shift the way that you move forward in your life. So that's the movement. So when I talk about the Think Big movement, thinking big, I defined earlier for you, and the movement is the ultimate shift in consciousness. Mm. Now I take that philosophy and then write a business novel parable around it, and then take my best practices and a lot of business philosophies and put them in the book. So you read it in real time as if you almost are the characters, because every character in my book, nobody's perfect. But there's a string of people, and all the characters have backstories, and nobody's perfect because nobody's perfect in life, and nothing's perfect in business, and nothing comes wrapped up in a perfect box. So there's twists and turns and advice and wisdom based on the characters that enter into the main characters like Jacob. And as he walks his journey through the book, you experience him going through his own Think Big evolution and his own shift in consciousness, hence his movement, as he gets through the book and ultimately towards the end of the book. And so what I wanted to do is create not only a business book, but also somewhat of a novel that takes people on not only a business journey, but a spiritual journey. And it has a lot of depth to it, the book. And in the meantime, you're going to grow your business. But if you're not a business person, you'll still enjoy the book because of the spiritual journey it takes you on.
Yeah, yeah. You know what that reminds me of? Reminds me of one of my favorite books, The Alchemist.
Absolutely. It's one of my favorite books ever. And my book is very Alchemist, Celestine Prophecy, Four Agreements, Richest Man in Babylon, you know, all of those types of books. I love The Alchemist. Is one of my favorites. I don't mean to cut you short. I want to hear why you love it. But I buy, every time I love a book, I buy, you know, 3, 4, 5 copies. So I have about 100 books in my house. Because I usually, you know, I like giving them out. And The Alchemist is always a staple that I have 3, 4, or 5 books to give away.
Absolutely. No, and I love that you cut me off, because I love that excitement. That's how I feel about the book. You know, Santiago's story for me is one. I mean, finding a personal legend. I shared my story with you. I was this kid who's just always the minority everywhere went, but I had this big vision. And for me, thinking big was, you know, making sure that people effectively learned how to communicate across cultures. How does someone who grew up in a military dictatorship and then found himself in all these continents where people were fighting over things that, from my vantage point, I was like, there's beauty in this difference. There's multiple perspectives. I want to be that bridge. And so, that fulfillment was, you know, I relate a lot to Santiago, not only as someone that's journey, you know, just going through several parts of the world, because that was kind of me, but also the fact that his alchemy ultimately was something a lot deeper than what he initially thought.
Oh my God. When I finished reading that book, and I always tell people, you got to read it. You may start reading it and think, what the hell am I reading? But you got to get to the very end of the book, because, and obviously you and I aren't going to talk about what happens at the end, but it is that book. I still remember the feeling thinking I needed more, I needed more, I needed more. And it's hard for me. I have not found a book that has been able to be the extension of that book. Right. The only other book I've read where I felt the same way was, and I read a ton. I love to read. I love to listen to books on tape, Audible.
Me too.
Was Seat of the Soul by Gary Zukav.
Oh, I haven't read that.
And you read it?
No, I haven't read it yet.
You got to read it. It's one of my favorite books. I actually put his book in my book. His book is part of my book, and actually part of my bio that I put on my website, because it had such a shift for me in consciousness. I remember seeing an interview with him randomly, being interviewed actually by Oprah. I don't even know how I would have like seen it at a 4 o'clock whenever it was on. But I saw him interviewed, and he talked about this book, Seat of the Soul, and I just was so like mesmerized by the book. And so, but there was one line in the book in particular that had a huge shift in me. And I think, I don't even know if he spoke about it or if I read it. I can't remember. It doesn't matter. But I must have read it 25 years ago. And it said that the ideal human being is when the personality ends and the soul begins.
Wow.
And you can't really tell when that happens. And I thought to myself, wow, you know, so I was 25 at the 20 at the time, in my early 20s. And I was thinking, and I remember thinking to myself, I'm out of alignment. I'm out of alignment because I know who I am in my soul, but my personality is just not fully in alignment with that. And that was a huge shift for me. That book rocked my world. Wow. That was an amazing book. I would compare that book to, A New Earth, Power of Now, The Alchemist, and Seed of the Soul. I mean, four life-changing books for me.
Well, now you just made me get it. I just got it in Audible right now. So now I've gotten it.
Right. All right. Good. Enjoy it. Let me know after you're done reading it or listening to it. Let me know. Call me.
Absolutely. You know, I've been going through a lot of books this year. I'm on my 27th.
Nice.
Definitely happy to do that.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I want to talk to you about this. Do you believe that you can teach someone to be an entrepreneur, or is that innate?
Well, I think it depends. I think really it depends on what your level of risk is. I think it's just you're either born an entrepreneur or you're not, but you can also be an entrepreneur with the right business partners, and that's the, I would say, option two entrepreneurial experience. Meaning, hey, you know, there's plenty of people where, you know, I was an entrepreneur out of college, but I couldn't have started an internet company by myself. I just couldn't. You know, so I did it with my brother and a buddy of ours, you know, so we needed the three of us. I didn't even really know what the internet was when I started the company, but I knew it was something big, and I knew that it was going to get and be really big and be a absolute paradigm shift for the way people did things. That I knew, and I was passionate about it, and I studied it, but I couldn't have done it by myself. So, you know, if I would have been an entrepreneur and done something by myself back in 1995 June of 95, I probably wouldn't have done an internet business because I didn't know technology. I just knew sales and I knew the concept of what the internet was. So, but I had two business partners that did, and we taught each other different elements of the business. So I think you have to be ready to take some risk, and depending on the level of risk you're willing to take will depend on the level of money you have and the level of where you are in your life and the level and confidence you have that you can do it by yourself, like I am now doing it by myself, versus back, you know, 25 years ago, I needed business partners to be an entrepreneur. So I think you just got to be really honest with yourself and understand what your unique strengths are and what you want to do and where you see the hole in the marketplace, and either be ready to commit 80 plus hours a week for the first 3-4 plus years of working really hard. Today, I think it's easier to be an entrepreneur because you can have virtual assistants very easily. And so, do I think anybody can be an entrepreneur? Not everybody. I think if you have a very fixed mindset, like you talked about earlier, no, I don't think those people are the best entrepreneurs. They can act like entrepreneurs within an industry, but they're not the best. You have to be growth-minded, and you have to have a certain level of risk in your DNA to really just go for it and have the faith that your vision is going to turn into something real.
Wow. This is good stuff here. It's interesting because that's always the debate, you know, innate or not. And whatever the opinion is that you have, it's, I think the idea of what you're saying is ultimately you can still build a business even if it wasn't something that was natural to you, whether it's surrounding yourself with the type of people right. that can help you get there, or maybe it's something that you do. Right.
But I'll tell you one thing, Tayo. I also think it's, you know, there's no personality that is right or wrong to start a company and be an entrepreneur. I mean, I know plenty of entrepreneurs that are, you know, external and outrageous and this and that, but I know plenty of entrepreneurs that are pretty introverted and just really smart, and they can start a business, grow a business successfully, and then they hire people to do things that aren't their strengths. So, you know, just be, you know, I think that's important just to point out.
No, it is. I mean, in my opinion, I wasn't a prototypical entrepreneur. I always say I sort of fell into this, but then again, it was always something I wanted to do since I was 10. I mean, since I was 10, right. I said I wanted to change the world. I just had a different path.
That's funny, because when I was 7, I remember thinking, I want to own my own company and be the president of my own company. I mean, I knew it. But I'll say one thing too. Today you don't need to be 100% entrepreneur. You can be a side entrepreneur.
Exactly.
I mean, you can have there's plenty of people that have amazing businesses online that also work a 40-hour work week. And whether it's, you know, my wife is always buying things on Etsy. I mean, those are all entrepreneurs in a way. But, you know, that's a secure way of being an entrepreneur, because it's extra income. So you don't have to put it all out there. Today, you can have it all. You know, you can be working in corporate America, and you can also be an entrepreneur on the side.
We live in the gig economy now. A lot of people do, you know, Uber, Lyft, everything.
Yes, exactly.
So that's good. Well, so then, okay, so let's go back a little bit to the company elements of this. What is the number one thing that, you know, gets companies or people stuck? And what are the three things that you can do to get unstuck?
So the number one thing that gets companies stuck is they have the wrong people in the wrong seats doing the wrong things, and it affects their culture. It takes a ton of time to manage the wrong people, and they have either, you know, for a plethora of reasons, have gotten themselves in a environment where they aren't getting rid of people, they aren't training people, they're training the wrong people, and they just, you know. So the solution, you get the right people in the right seats. And you look at your entire org chart, and you look at them and you rate them 1 through 10. And anybody who's under a 9 or an 8 specifically, then you have to have a coaching solution for them. How are you going to coach them up? Or you need to coach them to a new seat, or you need to coach them out of your company, which means you got to then reverse engineer a recruiting strategy to fill those seats. The next thing you got to do is really look at the systems, the processes and the planning that is incorporated into your organization. Meaning, a lot of times companies don't have systems, they don't have processes, they're not planning, they make decisions on the fly. There's no set planning process or system in place. Well, when that happens, a lot of times sometimes you're actually overstaffed, even though it feels like you're understaffed, because nobody knows what to do and there's nothing that's tight. So you really got to look and examine that, and that is critically important. The last thing is, you always got to be recruiting and looking for top talent. If you want to be the best, you always got to have the best. And with that, you have to not only recruit, but you have to be training people on a consistent basis. All of your people, you need to have them in an environment where you are always training them. You are talking about the importance of self-education and self-learning. They should be committing to minimum of 15 to 30 minutes a day of learning, listening to podcasts, listening to a book. You want to infuse that. You want to be doing workshops. You want to be training your people. That's how you retain your people. And overall, people want leadership. They want to be led, and they want their opinion in the mix, but they want to be led by leaders. Too many leaders don't lead. You can be in a leadership position and not lead. You have to own the responsibility to lead your people to where you want to go, and always hold the vision of the company in front of not only yourself, but them and that includes their vision in front of them as well, and know what everybody's driver is within an organization so you can influence, inspire, and have the credibility to do so to grow your business.
Well said. Well said. And then, okay, so then...
Thank you.
I mean, it's very clear. You know exactly what you've done. You've lived it. You walk the talk. The next thing then is, I'm wondering, you talked about getting stuck and unstuck, but how do you grow and reset your culture? Because, yeah, you want the leader, but then, okay, leader wants to create this type of culture. How do you grow that type of culture and reset it?
Well, first, you got to realize, you got to understand what your culture is. And so a lot of times you really want to spend time. There's something called a net promoter score, and you want to spend some time understanding kind of what your culture is. And an easy way to do that is at your next staff meeting, hand out blank pieces of small paper, ask people to rank the culture 1 through 10. They'll be very honest. They roll up the paper, they throw it in a hat, you undo it, you take the average. There's your culture right there. So I go into companies sometimes and do that simple exercise, and all what we realize is the culture is a 4 out of 10.
Wow.
And so then the discussion starts. Okay, where are we broken? Where are the leaks? Well, typically it all comes back to people. And it all comes back to people managing people who don't know how to manage people. And when you have people who have been promoted into management positions, I see it happen all the time, and every business is guilty of it. You know, you get promoted because you've been at a company for a long time. Now you're a manager. You were great at what you did, but you really don't know how to manage people. And then the company doesn't train you how to manage your people. And because that doesn't happen, all you have is disgruntled people, and 80% of your day is now putting out fires and getting rid of drama. And so it really always comes back to the people. And that's what gets us stuck.
Wow.
So how do you reset your culture? You understand where you are. You do some online surveys. You understand what your net promoter score is, and you constantly are on a mission then to grow that. You get the right people in, you get toxic people out of your organization. I am a big fan of, you know, you have these people, get people in the right seats, train the people that are there. But if there's somebody toxic, you got to get them out of the organization. That is the number one way to reset your culture, not reset, but start on the path of, because toxic people will bring down an organization. You are only as high as your lowest bar. And whatever your lowest standard is your standard to the company. So that's one thing you got to really take seriously as a leader. A lot of leaders don't do that because they don't want to get rid of people. And that is a leadership responsibility. You have a responsibility as the owner of the company, as the leader of the company, to create a safe environment for those that come to work and want to do their best every day. That's your responsibility. And so that's what they need to do. That is the first thing. If you don't get rid of the toxic people and you don't get the right people in the right seats and you don't have the systems, the processes, and start shifting the mindset, and it starts with the leader. If the leader doesn't want to grow, can't happen. That is the first step for resetting your culture. And then once you have the right people, you got to get the systems and the processes and the planning down. Because if you don't have that, then people are going in 1,000 different directions, and then they're pissed, and then they feel micromanaged, and they don't want that. They want to be empowered. So you got to get that done, and then that begins to reset your culture. Wow. And then you start layering in other things, like doing fun things and incorporating, in some instances, you can do, give people's birthdays off. There's a lot of fun things you can do as you constantly evolve your culture. One of the things I like to do is tell companies to have a fun committee where they think of fun things to do. I love when I go into an organization and they say, oh, we bring in lunch twice a month, and we bring in lunch 3 times a month, and every Friday we actually bring in lunch, and every Tuesday we bring in breakfast, and we have jeans day every Friday on summer during the summer, and during the month of September we do this, and we have a theme every month of what we do. They try to make it fun. You're with these people more than you are with your family. So, but as far as resetting your culture, those are some of the things.
No, I love it. I love it. And then when you reset the culture, a CEO says, I want to be a CEO. What are top 3 qualities that a CEO must have to bring out the best in their people?
Number one, let them know that they matter, right? The people know that they matter. Don't micromanage them. And because I think that's a huge thing. You got to be careful when you are a leader. If your people feel micromanaged by you, the CEO, then that's not a good thing. And they absolutely want to know that they matter to the organization, especially going down to the nitty-gritty. I love when I hear people talking, you know, the CEOs go down and they're talking to the people in the mailroom. Like, hey, listen, you make a big difference in this company. Everything you do, you know, is just as important as everything that everybody else in this company does. And really finding the windows of time to compliment them and make them feel important. But the key is, as a CEO, to inspire and influence your team and be a really solid communicator. And if you're not a solid communicator where you can inspire, influence, still be firm, right? It's okay for the CEO to be firm. There's lots of goals. There's lots of things to do to grow a company. And, you know, you got to know the difference of when to be nice and tough and tough and nice. And so sometimes CEOs do get misunderstood, but you got to always be, you know, inspiring and influencing people to be their best and trust and have trust in them. If they feel trusted, that they know they have the trust to make a good a decision, and that in, that it'll be okay if they make a mistake once, that hopefully they won't make the same mistake twice, then if you can infuse that you have trust in them, then they will just, they'll run through a brick wall for you.
Yeah, no, that's so true. And I do a lot of work with companies, and that's definitely when there's a disconnect with the company culture and the internal cultures, there's just no room for growth unless those things are addressed. And then if they're addressed in public and people are working towards that and it's active and people are not micromanaging, it then becomes a more harmonious environment as opposed to something that's potentially harmful. Okay.
Absolutely. Huh. Yeah.
All right. Well, as we're getting ready to wrap up here, I'm curious with, I have two questions. One is,
yeah,
we're staying with this company culture here. How do you hire the right people? And then after that, I'm going to be selfish and want to ask you what you've learned about yourself and trusting your gut.
How you hire the right people. This is kind of an easy one. What I tell people is ABR, always be recruiting. It is a numbers game. You have to always be recruiting. Do not settle and have high standards. I'm doing, you know, a lot of times when I'm working with clients, there's a lot of different variations that I'll work with clients. And one of the ways is I'll be an interim COO for some clients where I actually go in house and I do a lot of the, you know, integrating and working with the, we're working with everybody in the company. And when things, when people don't have time to do certain things, I'll take it over. So right now I'm doing a little bit of recruiting for one of my clients. And I went through about 110 resumes for one of the positions we're looking for. And of the 110, I sent out 25 emails to from Indeed. And I basically said, like, hey, you know, I'd like to do a 10-minute phone screen with you. Please let me know what works. John, and then I left, you know, John Dwoskin, and then I left my phone number, 248-535-7796. So what I wanted when I sent that out was I wanted people to pick up the phone and call me. I didn't want them to email me back. I didn't say that, but that's the type of person I'm looking for. So of the 25 emails that I sent out of the 110, I got about 12 emails back, but no phone calls. So I looked through 110 resumes, sent 25 emails out, got about 12-ish responses, no phone calls. Until today, I got one phone call. And the person said, I got an email back, because the email goes to somebody else in the company, that said the person was out of town. So I went to the website. This was 15 minutes later. I saw that you left your phone number. I went to the website and checked it out, like the email said. And I wanted to call you to talk about why I'm right for the position. Boom, 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 boom. When can I come in for an interview? And I thought, okay, you know what? That's it. So one out of 25 is going to actually pick up the phone, be proactive, and be the type of person that I want to interview. Now, I don't know what they're like because they're coming in next week for me to interview them. But that's what I expect, and that's a numbers game. So that's one out of 110 resumes that I looked at that actually did what I wanted them to do to be the type of person that I want within this company and the culture. So you got to be patient. You got to know the numbers. And I actually was telling somebody earlier in the day, they were saying, when are we going to get this one position filled? I said, listen, it's, you know, I was going telling them the same thing. I said, listen, if we can get a 1 out of 20, 1 out of 30 resumes that we email in the door, that's good. So it was great to show them that number. But you got to be patient. You got to know your ratios. You got to know that you should not settle. If you settle now, hire slow, fire fast. If you settle, then you'll just have to be, chasing people later on. So know what you want. Know exactly what you want. Know the role for the position, the responsibility, the type of characteristics you want in a person, and don't settle.
Don't settle. Love it. That's a good mantra for life in general. And in terms of not settling, what have you learned about yourself from following your gut?
Well, I'll tell you what I learned. That I should have listened to my gut a long time ago, a little bit clearer. Because I wanted to start my business about a year and a half before I did. And probably 2 years before I did. But I didn't, because I was just nervous and I was scared. And I had gone to my business coach at the time, who would still be my business coach, but unfortunately he passed away about a year ago.
I'm sorry.
I know. I am too. He was awesome. His name was Jules. And he said, I want you to just go talk to this one attorney. And so I talked to the attorney, and long story short, as I was leaving, he said, if you don't do something, you'll look back with regret. And I thought, wow, that was impactful for me. And it was, and he was right. But it still took me about a year to kind of make my own jump, because I was nervous, about this, that, and the other. I have two children. I'm married. I have health insurance. There's a thousand different things that kind of go through your head. And but once I, put my stake in the ground and used social media to begin promoting my company, it was the greatest thing ever. And so to me, what I learned about myself is always listen to my gut, and because it's always done good by me. And when I ignore it, it's not a good thing.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
I always close my interview with this. It's the mission statement. It's my why, if you will. And it's use your difference to make a difference, right? That's what I believe.
I love it.
Thank you so much.
So that's a great one.
Oh, it's a great one? Thank you. I got the cosign. John. But I always ask my guests that question. How do you, John, use your difference to make a difference?
I do my best every day to make a difference and help people be better. And to me, that's my own personal scorecard. And every single morning and every single night and every client that I'm with. And I've been burned a couple times when I think certain clients don't want to be better and they don't want to be helped. And they think they do, but they don't. And so when I have strayed from that philosophy, not only for myself, but kind of for people who I think want that as well, then I get burned. And so I really do my best to kind of tap into the knowing that I have, that I want to help people be better. I want to help businesses be better. And those are the people that I want to work with, and those are the people that I want to surround myself with. And so I try to give a little bit of stuff that I've learned and continue to learn, and tap into just my abilities to listen to people and understand where they are and how to get them to where they want to be. And if I can do that every day, then I'm fulfilled, and I think I'm making a little bit of difference in the world every day.
Dude, you're awesome. Thank you so much.
You're awesome, Tayo. Thank you.
No, this has been amazing. And I just want to thank you for just taking us on a personal / entrepreneurial journal. It's very much like your book almost.
Yeah. Well, my book, it's a lot of real life, my book. So yeah. If anybody buys it, I hope they enjoy it. And if they don't, you can return it.
Well, I'll definitely make sure we put the links there. The links of the Think Big Movement, that's the book. Also, the John Dorskin Experience. It's part of your website, where you're, who you are, and all your podcasts are also there. JohnDwoskin.com. We'll put all that there, and we'll make sure that people get, you know, enriched in many, many multiple ways. But I want to thank you once again for coming on the show. It's been a true enlightened one.
Yeah, Tayo, I appreciate you having me on the show. Thank you to you and thank you to your listeners. I appreciate it. And thanks for your time and everybody who's listening's time as well.
Awesome. Ladies and gentlemen, until next time, use your difference to make a difference.
You've just been listening to the As Told by Nomads podcast. For more ways to reach out to Tayo and to use your difference to make a difference, head over to www.tayoroxon.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.